dancing in the apocalypse.
I gotta get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and sparkle, Neely, sparkle.
I know what some of your big city no bra wearing hairy legged women livers might say.
Hello everyone and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 255 and I'm feeling alive. All right, it shows if you're waiting in the studio with me are my friends. So let me introduce you to them. Of course, first up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
I'll tell you, Iffy, what's good is Dr. Kiara M. Bridges. She is a law professor at Berkeley, and she testified this week about, I'm not even sure what the hearing was about, but basically the hearing was about putting Josh Hawley on blast and having him find out when he tried to fuck around. There was a conversation about abortion, and she was accusing him of erasing the fact that, you know, trans men can get pregnant, and he was being very smug and Josh Hawley about the whole thing. And she just sort of systematically cut him to rhetorical ribbons. And you love to see it, as they say. And I especially love to see it when on the other end of it is fucking Josh Hawley. So Dr. Kiara M. Bridges, I never heard of you before this week, but I am your biggest fan.
Ooh.
I swam laps after that. And the whole time I was just thinking of his stupid face. and then how nice it was to have someone like say to him what I'd like to say to him is much uglier than what she said.
Yeah.
But you know, she
still kept it classy, but
oof. she had all of it. Yeah.
Oh, nice indeed. Well, you know, look, you know she swims, but do you also know that she's a super producer and festival programmer? It's Drea Clark. What's good?
You got those in there, you still did it. Never lets me down. My iffy waterway.
Oh, yeah.
What's good with me is not nearly as righteous as the good professor, but I am newly smitten with this series, a YouTube series that Architectural Digest does, where they pair two designers. So they'll get like an architect and a design maker or something, and then they'll give them the same rudimentary piece and then they get like one day to re-envision it. So they gave a wood maker craftsman woman and then an interior designer just a standard folding chair, and they had a day and they made these beautiful works of art that are also furniture out of them. And as you guys know, one of the things I enjoy in this life is watching people be good at what they're doing. And when I can do that in sort of 7 minutes or less, and then they get to see each other's work and they're always very complimentary. It's just good vibes and some nice design. All things I love.
Competence makes for good television.
It truly does.
Yes, indeed. We're going to keep this ball a-strolling and trolling. I think at this point, you know that we're known for having amazing guests, wonderful folks. And look, this episode is no different. Today, we have Kevin Avery, writer for shows like The Great North. And last week tonight, comedian and former co-host of the podcast, Denzel Washington is the greatest actor of all time, period. What's good?
Well, I feel like a simpleton. Thank you for that introduction. But compared to all y'all's good things, I just started watching Star Trek Discovery.
All right.
That's a good thing. I know, but
I'm listening to politics and you know, progressive things happening.
A couple weeks ago, I had Pop-Tarts. It's fine.
All right, then I feel all right.
I just put a spin on my YouTube addiction.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Star Trek Discovery is nothing new. It's been around. But there's an amazing feeling when you start watching a show that's been around and you fall in love with it and you're hooked on it. And that's the feeling I'm getting right now with this show. It's just I'm loving being glued to something, even though it's my TV, but I'm loving being sucked into like what's going on in the old on the old Discovery. What's happening? You know that feeling where you just gotta know, like I should be doing other shit, but here I am just watching the TV. I'm really enjoying Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah,
I just started watching
about
YouTube.
Yeah. So I get it. Yeah. Yeah.
My husband just started watching Stranger Things season one. So, you know.
Oh, wow. See? There you go.
He's in a journey.
RIP to Conversations with Dave for a minute.
Exactly. No spoilers. Iffy, what's good?
What's good with me is, this is truly going to go into the realm of things that, you know, not I only I will care about, but I'm gonna talk about it. They're finally releasing the Louis Vuitton Air Force Ones, which, you know, I've been waiting for. It's one of the last ventures from the late Virgil Abloh with Louis Vuitton. Of course, the price is ridiculous. And look, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. If you see me on them, don't ask, whose college fund that came out of. Just know I have them and I'm happy with them if I can get them.
I did have a moment of, I bet we could surprise him. He says this is going to be something only of interest to him. I bet. No, yeah. Nope. Totally.
Hold on a second.
Yes, Kevin.
Now, I wouldn't say I'm a sneakerhead, but I've recently fallen into the sneaker.
Yeah, welcome.
and so when you said that, I perked up a little, like, now, wait a minute. No, so when do these come out? And is it possible to even... I do not know much about sneakers.
Okay, well, I'm gonna just preface this with, like, this is the Louis Vuitton one, so they're asking for that Louis Vuitton. But I see the credits. I know it's we're boxing with the same okay. gloves here.
Wow. How dare you?
You can only buy these from Louis Vuitton, and I know they're exclusive because my thirsty Louis Vuitton concierge that I hit up whenever I want something and they reply almost immediately. Sure. I ask about these shoes, still haven't heard back. Wow.
Can you hire a 12-year-old to go stand inside of the South Coast Plaza all day for you? Is that a
Yeah. Really nervous about where that sentence was going to end up. Glad you got that out.
No, quickly. Yeah. No, I definitely had a 12-year-old getting supreme for me for a while of his own volition. I didn't put him to work. He was already working. I was only reaping what he was sowing.
Good for you. Good for you.
But it looks like it's going to be on Louis Vuitton's website, which means it's going to be bad. Because if you're not built to sell sneakers, you're not familiar with the game, it means you're going to get like bombed by these weirdo hackers who are going to just like run through your inventory and you're going to be like, what happened? And it was like, oh, it's what happens to all of y'all who have not paid a single lick of attention to shoe sales ever.
Yeah.
And in 10 minutes, they'll all be on eBay.
Yeah. Well, what else? Look, where I'm going, I won't need luck. I'll need box. need box. But if it doesn't work out, I'll just, chill, relax, and probably to kind of calm myself down, clean some carpets. Much like the main character on today's show that we're talking about, Mississippi Masala. We're celebrating a formerly missing movie that's now got its very own Criterion re-release. It's Mira Nair's Mississippi Masala. And later, we're going to talk about some untold cinema stories. But first, it's time for Itadick. Schiffer, is this important? Do I care? Alonzo, you want to kick this thing off?
Certainly. So, if you are going on the Universal Tour anytime soon, in addition to the possibility of seeing Ify Wadaway walking to or from his car, there will be other attractions for you to check out. The set from Jupiter's Claim, which is an amusement park from the upcoming Jordan Peele film Nope, has been carefully taken apart and reassembled to become part of the studio tour at Universal Studios Hollywood. While Jupiter's Claim joins many other Universal movie sets, this will mark the first time ever that an attraction opens at the park on the same day as the film it's from. That day would be today, July 22nd. Is this important? Do you care?
If it's July 22nd, today is my mother's birthday. Shout out to Gidget.
Woo!
I think this is interesting, largely for so many reasons. One of them is... it's part of Jordan Peele's enormous contract that he did, this like multi-picture deal, but it also had all of these kind of auxiliary elements, one of which was an amusement park attraction. And I mean, that's the kind of lateral thinking I'm looking for in certain creatives. Not all of them, but good for you, Jordan Peele. Good for you.
That explains a lot. On set, there's been this special event, Nope, that I've been walking past, and I've been thinking that they're doing like a screening for it or something, and now it is very obvious that they've been showing people this part of the tour. And they have this like fun, like fitness, like back trail, like back lot trail that you could walk on, where like, you know, just to exercise, and I've been walking on it, but it definitely feels like I'm just constantly going places I'm not supposed to be, because I'll just be like in the Western version of like, oh, the tram definitely goes through here and it rains, but it says I can walk here. And yeah, so yeah, you will not only see me walking to and from my car, but usually some on some part of the set, trying to figure out if they're going to kick me out or not.
If he's up in the second story of the backdraft,
trying
to put out fire,
swimming with
it's
jaws.
It's really hot. It's actual fire. Yeah.
Look, as of this recording, and I have not yet seen Nope, but I'm very much looking forward to it. The only thing that gives me trepidation about all this is like, man, hope your movie's good. You know, like this is usually like you make it to the tour because the movie has already become beloved by audiences, and oh yeah, they want to see the car or the house or the blah blah blah. So it's like I certainly hope the film delivers, because otherwise it's sort of like we're not going to get the press release about the quiet dismantling of the amusement park if this movie should, heaven forbid, wind up being unsuccessful. So I mean, good on him for that clout, but like, you know, that day and date makes me a little nervous.
I think that I'm happy that that's a thing that he was able to do. But it's like you said, I haven't seen the movie yet, so I can't get excited to go sit in the middle of the movie on a Universal tour. You know
what I mean?
Right. It's like, all right.
It reminds me of how, like, M. Night Shyamalan thought it would be a great idea to have a journalist follow him around while he was making Lady in the Water. Or that Brian De Palma thought it was a great idea to have a journalist follow him around while he was making Bonfire of the Vanities. You know, like, maybe sometimes let the movie happen first and then, you know, take the victory
and
lap.
Then bring Vanity Fair
in. Yeah.
But again, I think it's kind of cool that somehow this feels unprecedented.
Oh, for sure.
It is, yeah.
The opening of it is, and it's also unique in, I believe, Jupiter's claim within the movie Nope is also like a tourist attraction. So it's not, you know, there's other tours and whatever, like Backdraft, right? That was not like you're going and you're replicating being in a fire or whatever. This is, they've replicated an amusement tourism thing.
I'm impressed that he got to shoot this movie in IMAX, which, you know, for a guy who started out, you know, literally making a Blumhouse movie, that's like, you know, obviously quite the expansion of budget. So, you know, he's occupying a unique space in that he is like making horror movies, but as an Oscar winner, you know, and so these are now like prestige horror movies.
Indeed. All right. Speaking of movies, that's how you segue. AMC Theaters has brought back $5 Tuesdays.
Nice.
When movie theaters across the country and the world closed in 2020, movie theater marketing schemes also had to take a pause. Now AMC has brought back one of those programs here in the U.S. Until October, you can get tickets to any Tuesday movie at an AMC theater for $5 if you are a member of their free, like, AMC, whatever the
Stubs, I think, is what it's called.
It's the Stubs, whatever the baseline free
version. A-list is the one you pay for. Stubs is the free.
Exactly, the insider. Stubs insider. Is this important? Do you care?
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's been so much talk we've been having about, like, how do we bring theaters back? How do we bring, you know, the shared movie experience back? And, you know, for a lot of people who, you know, if you have like a family that you have to bring and buy popcorn for and all that stuff, you know, like a night at the movies can get real pricey. So, yeah, I think $5 Tuesdays is going to sort of open things up for people who maybe, you know, are not looking at, you know, a Saturday night ticket as a viable entertainment option, but they will look at a Tuesday night ticket as one.
As someone who's become a weekday matinee viewer,
not
to brag, just the coolest place to be. I've been going to the movies on Tuesdays, and I've been going early where I was already delighted because it was 30% off. Because I am a Nana, and apparently I'm watching those Nana-timed movies. $5, even better. I won't throw a $5 movie out of bed for eating crackers.
You won't leave it on the table.
I won't do that. Nah.
We're proud of you for trying. That was a solid effort.
Thank you.
Good on you, as they say. I'm here's the thing. I kind of don't care because, well, I'm glad that movies are. Obviously, I want movies and I want theaters to survive. I am still very COVID shy of sitting in a theater. I've been trying to see Thor for days now because I only want to see it
alone,
like, first thing in the morning by myself in the theater. And so I've been buying tickets and then checking Fandango to see how many other people have booked it. And if there are too many people, I get a refund and I'm like, let's try Thursday. And so I've been doing this. This has been an ongoing thing now. And I'm like, I just want to see Thor. But I I'm not trying to roll up in the theater with a whole lot of people. I want everyone to stay away from the theaters while I'm there. So
the $5 really going to put a cramp in your style.
Yeah, that's
too attractive. Okay.
A little bit.
I'm going to hold out for the Wednesday. I'm with you.
Maybe that's Monday or Wednesday now is going to suddenly suffer.
That's
your
become
moment.
A matinee weekday screener.
Matinee Bay.
Get my own theater.
Yeah.
Matinee Bay.
Yeah. No, I definitely get that because I like. Especially like with a Marvel one, I feel like now the Marvel droves are rolling out. And let's be honest, those are the ones you trust the least. you know,
like, says the Snyder head.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, but yeah, it has been interesting because like we strategically tried to pick one like in. As far away, like, because it seems like people were far back, far forward. And of course, something we're going to finally have to talk about when we start coming to theaters, stay in the fucking seat you paid for. Don't fucking move closer. I picked this middle one because I specifically saw no one was sitting there. Why the fuck did you move over there?
Oh, unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Well, you know, there is a Back to the Future musical coming to Broadway. A musical adaptation of the 1985 movie has been playing in London's West End for a year, and now there are plans to bring it to Broadway in the near future, aka 2023. The show reportedly features a high gigawatt prop, a $300,000 stainless steel DeLorean that twists and tilts across the stage. It won the 2022 Olivier Award. It won the 2022.
And it's gigawatt. I have a little bit of respect.
Okay. I'll stand firm on gigawatt. Gigawatt. It won the 2022 Olivier Award for Best New Musical. That's like the British Tony. Is this important? Do you care?
Oh, amazing. I don't care,
but it is important. Only because if you think movie theaters are having a hard time getting asses and seats, Broadway has really been having a time of it. And, you know, there was a whole thing lately where, like, this one group of, like, producers or something sort of trying to lift the mask mandate. And other people are like, no, thank you. And, you know, there's people in shows getting sick and people in audiences getting sick. And so like they've really been having a hard time kind of getting their act back together. And so more and more, I think we're going to be seeing like these kind of pre-sold concepts as ways to get, you know, that's why there've been so many musicals based on movies in the last few years, because it's a familiar thing. You're either going to revive an old show or you're going to turn Back to the Future into a musical so that, you know, if people are coming from out of town, they know what they're getting or they think they know what they're getting. There's also a National Lampoon's Vacation musical happening. I don't know if you guys have heard Hunter Foster as Clark Griswold. Yeah. So that's going to be, you know, it's a different story with the family or something. I don't know what anyway, but yeah, I'm not surprised that they are going like high concept. And look, once you had a Chitty Chitty Bang Bang musical, the Back to the Future one was not going to be too far behind because it's all about the car.
Well, listeners know all I've ever wanted is a musical to American Psycho.
And then you, turns out you had one.
Also reminded me there is already a musical to American Psycho. Thanks for that. Music by Duncan Sheep. I'll never forget again. Well, the Back to the Future, I really like this as a bookend to what we're talking about because there is already a ride for it at Universal. So it really dovetails nicely. And apparently this one, it has the built-in, you have your audience already. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Marissa's telling me they got rid of that ride.
Yeah, they've been, yeah.
You know
what?
Got
replaced by
know.
The Simpsons ride. And
look,
I think
if
it's
the
like
musical takes off,
now.
They'll bring it back.
F that. There's even more people at amusement parks than movie theaters. I'm obviously not going to them. But the built-in thing you have here is crowd familiarity. Like, this movie is on TV all the time. It doesn't matter when you were born, when you caught it. If it's something you think of as an old movie, you're gonna see Doc and you're the hare and you're gonna be like, oh, Marty, like, you're gonna get it, you're gonna watch it. Apparently it's very catchy. Andrew Lloyd Webber's wife, who's, I guess, got like her finger on the musical theater pulse, which sounds disgusting and probably is, thinks this is a hot ticket, so it will likely be here.
Look,
so
they made yeah, a, by next they, year, they like. Made a decent musical out of Beetlejuice, which actually starred Andrew Lloyd Webber's son. So you know, anything is possible. And if I recall correctly, Sunset Boulevard also rather car centric as musicals go. So you know, there is precedent.
I don't know. I wouldn't want to see Back to the Future on the stage because there's just the movie.
Well, it's not for you, Kevin.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to see
Everything
it either.
Everything else Excuse is me. For you. This is not
Guys,
for you.
My bad. Let me take off my top hat and just shut the hell up.
Yeah, put the monocle back in the drawer, mister.
All right. No, I keep that in. I got to see.
Okay,
it.
Yeah, fair enough.
We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be traveling back to the year 1991 for Mississippi Masala.
Once again, our friends from Soylent are back supporting the podcast with their delicious and nutritious nutrition products in convenient formats. That's right, I'm talking about Soylent, the original food tech company.
Look, you know me. You know I'm getting it in. You know I'm lifting them heavy weights. But what you don't know is you need lots of protein for that. That's why I like the Complete Protein, a deliciously rich and creamy plant-based high-protein nutrition shake with 30 grams of complete plant-based protein, 39 essential nutrients, and 0 grams of total sugars. Keto fam, stand up. This unique, well-balanced shake also provides 5 grams of branched-chain amino acids and 1,000 milligrams of omega-3 healthy fats. Satisfy your protein needs without sacrificing nutrition or taste and get it in with me in the gym. You know what I'm talking about.
So go to Soylent.com/MaxFilm and use promo code MaxFilm to get 20% off your first order. That's Soylent.com/MaxFilm and promo code MAXFILM for 20% off your first order. Life's too short for boring dinner. Keep your taste buds happy with every plate's ever-changing seasonal recipes and a variety of meat, seafood, and veggie options.
I appreciate that I often volunteer to discuss every plate because, as you guys know, I hate cooking. I don't understand it. I don't understand the point of it. I guess I do understand the point of it because I enjoy eating. But the great thing with every plate is it makes it so easy for someone like me who does not like what they're doing. I get a card with the recipe, with the pictures, with the exact steps to follow. Everything that I've made has been so delicious that I've like texted my mother and said, like, should I get into the cooking? And then I remember I only like it if they put it together for me like that. And the other bonus of it is they are at such a lower price point than a lot of the other meal kit services you can get. There's a million of these now. I look at all of them with skepticism. I don't know how difficult they are, but I do know that every single thing that I've had and made with every plate has been delicious, and they are cheaper overall. Things I love, cheapness and deliciousness. The Drea Clark story.
Ooh, that's what I call, you know what? Try every plate for just $1.79 per meal by going to everyplate.com and entering code MAXFILM179. That's everyplate.com and entering code MAXFILM179. Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Drea Clark,
Kevin Avery,
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're taking a look at a movie that, after years of being difficult to find and watch, recently got a 4K digital restoration by the Criterion Collection. Directed by Meera Nair, it was Sarita Chowdhury's debut film, starring alongside an up-and-coming Denzel Washington. Alonzo, would you mind giving us a brief synopsis of Mississippi Masala?
Sure. So the film is set in Greenwood, Mississippi. Sarita Chowdhury plays Mina. She is the daughter of parents who had to flee Uganda in 1972 when Idi Amin forced the expulsion of all the Asians living in the country. They have been living in Mississippi, working in hotels that their family owns, and she one day literally runs into, i.e. has a car accident with, Demetrius, played by Denzel Washington. He owns a carpet cleaning company. And even though the two of them run in very different social circles, at least in terms of, you know, ethnic identity, they have a spark and they keep running into each other and they start going out and they try and keep it a secret. But that never lasts. And their relationship sort of threatens to blow up both communities. And they have to kind of decide if being together means more to them than being embraced by communities who have issues with their relationship one way or another. But it's very sexy and a lot of fun. And Meera Nair's sophomore feature after the far more depressing Salaam Bombay. So who saw that coming? Anyway, I'm going to dismount like Drea. Mississippi Masala.
Yay.
Well, we want to kick this off because this was like a hard to find, hard to watch film. Was this everyone's first time seeing the film, or do we have some Masala vets?
Oh, I saw this in the theater, baby. In 1991, I was out for this one, which was very cool because, like, again, Meera Nair made a big splash with Salaam Bombay, which is a super bummer about, like, you know, destitute children living on the streets of Calcutta. And so that she would, her second film would be like this really charming, you know, rom-com was not anything anybody saw coming. Although obviously it is a rom-com with serious dramatic roots going on and a lot of interesting issues at play. You know, we'd never seen Sarita Chowdhury before. Denzel Washington, it's hard to remember this, that there was a time when he was still kind of the new guy. Like, he'd been on St. Elsewhere. He was just coming off of his Oscar win for Glory, but this was, I think, maybe the third movie I'd ever seen him in. Like, I saw Cry Freedom, which is kind of bollocks, but he's really good in, and then Glory, and then this. And I remember coming away from this movie thinking, this guy's Cary Grant. Like, this guy is going to be, like, the major romantic lead of the decades to come. And then he almost never made another movie like this, which I find really frustrating because I think he's so sexy and so charming. And, like, you know, he's great at what he does, but I would love it if he did more of movies like this.
I want him to do so many more. Still, I would still like to see him in more movies like this. Specifically, this movie, and this was my first time seeing it, awakened something I never knew was dormant in me, which is a deep desire to see Denzel Washington do like an electric slide sort of choreographed dance thing in a nightclub, like kind of slow and smirky. I can't tell you the days I could spend just watching that. He's a freaking electric dreamboat.
Yeah, that is the thing that you get that very rarely happens is Denzel. When I hosted the Denzel podcast with W. Kamau Bell, we called it frolicking because he was in Much Ado About Nothing, and there's a scene in Much Ado About Nothing where all the, it's sort of the beginning of the movie, all of the characters are sort of singing there's the musical number and they're all dancing. They're all doing this thing and they're all sort of frolicking and everyone's having a good time. Who's not frolicking? Denzel. And so to see him in a club doing the electric slide, it's like, well, okay.
A frolic.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's frolicking. All right.
He's frolicking, but he still has like his jaw set and he's like playing like five different moves. There's this woman who's coming back. He just knows what he's doing from such a young age. It's truly commendable.
This was the beginning of Denzel, the sex symbol. And because you even get him in uniform. I mean, he plays a carpet cleaner, but he's always wearing that carpet cleaning uniform. And you don't think about it till there's a scene towards the end where he walks straight to the camera and he's got that Denzel swagger, the walk, we always called it. And he's in you've never seen a carpet cleaner with the uniform worn more tight and just perfectly. Mm.
Yeah.
Like he looked like he was in the Navy with that thing.
Totally. Like his decaled van was all of a sudden just like a beautiful transport vehicle.
A chariot.
No, Serena Chowdhury is also lovely in this, and she's a little rougher around the edges, but it almost works for what this film is doing because she has this like untamed free spirit in this very regimented family and in this culture that, you know, there's... Interestingly, it's based on this reality at the time that Mira discovered, which is that South Asians owned and operated all of these hotels in like the Mississippi Delta, which is such an unusual subculture to stumble into. And so what a cool place to set this. And then you get another backdrop, which is the idea that they are refugees from Africa, but they're Indian ethnicity, and there's all these things too of their, you know, interacting. She's meeting all of these African Americans who are like, "You're from Africa? How does this work?"
And yeah, they've never been to Africa. She's never been to India. Yeah. Her father even was born in Uganda, so like he's never been to India either.
It's such a fascinating sort of cultural melting pot. I mean, like the almost definition.
A masala,
exactly.
Yeah, masala.
To like
yeah.
bring it all in like that, yeah.
Also, yeah, I love, you know, this definitely was one of those like movies that felt ahead of his time, you know, because you had someone who like, you know, in this time of the 90s, the main character Denzel's like, y'all just care about sex, don't you? Y'all just keep talking about the women y'all freaking. I care about her feelings. And and also it was like tackling things like the model minority and how it immediately switched between them the moment that like, you know, they start dating one of their daughters. And I thought that was like a very complex issue to tackle within this. So it truly was a like really fun watch and one of those things that I'm like, yeah, I'm grateful people can jump into it now because it's still going to be pretty relevant.
It's fascinating because I think, you know, people always think that the you know, things were better before. Like, I think I'm sure in the early 90s, if you had asked me, I would talk about how like, oh, you know, the 60s and 70s was this sort of heyday of like foreign films and foreign directors being, you know, taken seriously and getting, you know, on screens and all of this stuff. But like, I look back at seeing this movie in the early 90s and I just think, oh my God, there was so much going on back then. Like, this was when Sundance was really starting to rev up, like right after, like, you know, the big sale of Sex, Lies, and Videotape. So like the early 90s was this boom period for indie distributors and indie directors and new filmmakers and stories and narratives that were not just coming from out of the studios or from the same old place. And you were seeing them in theaters and then you were seeing them on VHS tapes in video stores, you know, and this was one of those kind of films. And so looking back on it now, it's like, oh my God, it was such a boom period. But then, yeah, like you said, this is a movie that kind of went missing. Like Kevin, when you guys did it on the show, did you have a hard time even tracking down a copy?
I got to be honest. I don't remember. Well, I'm sure I did, but it was weird to watch it now. I think if I had watched it when it first came out, if I'd seen it, because this was a movie that sort of, there's a lot of, I don't know if lore is the right word around it, but it, you know, I'd always heard about Mississippi Masala, and I think it's because of one of Denzel's, you know, it's the beginning of him as being Denzel. There's so much happening in this movie, and there's so many stories and pieces of story effortlessly woven together. Like, the direction is really solid in this, but it also feels, to watch it now for me, it feels like it's a little bit a victim of 90s storytelling and obviously 90s way of thinking. But that's the story. But there are certain things in it that I watch, like, oh, when they're working in the Denzel and Charles S. Dutton are working in the hotel, and then he gets a phone call from, it's Mina, right?
Yeah.
Just randomly in the hotel. And I was like, well, how the hell did she know where it's, granted, she could have just called the front desk and then they connect her. But then that means she's telling the guy at the front desk, hey, is that carpet cleaning guy? You know what I mean? Like, little things like that. And then she just goes back to, she hangs up the phone and walks back into the diner to eat with her dad. And I was like, what's going on? Like, little things like that, you could tell she just sort of went, the director went, we just got to put this doll, just make it work. Like, it just, as long as it tells the story. So I get stuff like that, but it, to watch it now, it jumps out at me in this weird way. And I'm like, well, that seems odd.
She could have pretended to be somebody else, and that she said, you know, that she could pretend to be the receptionist for the carpet cleaning company.
Alonzo calls a lot of carpet cleaners in hotels, so believe me when I say he knows how to problem solve.
She knows this world. She has grown up like since from the age of 9 or whatever, like cleaning hotels herself. So like she, you know, she knows the lingo.
I mean, look, I'm nitpicking. It's just this is one of these movies that I remember when we reviewed on the podcast. I like thinking back to it, I was like, how did I feel about this movie? And I didn't really remember a lot of it. And so it was sort of like I was watching it for the first time today. And so those little things, and some of it's fun. I mean, like the being at the club, the night being in any kind of hip hop or like dance club in the 90s in a movie, it's so awkward because I think the world outside of Black America hadn't grasped hip hop yet and hadn't wrapped their heads around it. So all of those, there's this movie Denzel made where he's at a hip hop club and it's just called hip hop. And that's what they, you know what I mean? So like when I, like to see them in this club, they're doing the electric slide. They just keep doing it.
As if they're just every new track, and then it's like, we're still doing it. It's like so.
They keep doing it until they start slow dancing. And that's when like, sign me up for that club. That's the speed I'm looking for. Yeah,
club wedding reception.
We are right at the point of the two things I want to talk about. One, how rude Denzel was. Yes! Saw her there with a man and was like, you want to slow dance? I would just get up and attack him. And then the other thing that was funny was the family friend who was like so kerfluffled as to why Denzel would want to sue him after fucking over his business. Yes. He was like, your friend, he's suing me. Why? I'm like, you ruined his life and he needs money now? Like, it was so bizarre to me how they, to steal something along the said earlier, how they fucked around and was surprised to find out.
But I did like even that character, to me, I think this is a great movie, but it is, there's too many flavors in this stew. Like, it is really hard. There's no like bite-sized big stuff. Like, oh, we're going to get this framework of the history of Uganda. We're going to introduce a dictator. Don't worry about it. Yeah. You're not going to see him again. Like, there's all this, this woman's going to be threatened by military in the rain. Don't worry about it. Like, there's so much happening here. But even that, the side character of her cousin has this, I don't resent the inclusion of all of these things. Like, I'd rather have too many things and too many flavors if they're trying something interesting. And these are, because like that character, there's an entire unnecessary thread of how that man's not getting laid in his new arranged marriage. Like, such a great...
Yeah, that doesn't really quite pay off.
No, it doesn't at all. And... like, for me, the inclusion of that, like, what I was assuming why that's in there, especially since there's a woman behind the camera, is that it sets up this thing, like, I think there's often the presumption that in these arranged marriages, like, and they very well could be, that women are in, like, lack of power do you know what I mean? It's women who will suffer as a result of that. For me, her inserting this thing there, that this couple got married, and then from then on, the woman was like, oh, my friend, I set all of the rules in this relationship. It was like reclaiming part of that. So it had nothing to do with any part of this story or the many threads of this story. And yet, like, it's something else she wanted to cook in.
Yeah, I mean, I think the stuff with the lawsuit kind of bakes into the whole notion of, like, you have the one guy who's the family friend who has the sit down with Denzel's like, we're all people of color here. But then as Denzel says to Roshan Seth later, like, you know, you were very happy to treat us as your doormats the minute you could. And the fact that, like, the white community that is, you know, model minority-ing Denzel and, like, you know, threatening to take his bank loan away, flipping out because he is involved with this woman who is of Indian descent, it's like, well, you know, it's like, this is Mississippi. So it's like the white people would flip out if you were having an affair with, like, a white blonde lady. You would be, well, of course, that's what Mississippi, certain, you know, types of, you know, entrenched racists would do. But the fact that they're having that same reaction when he's involved with, quote unquote, another person of color, I think kind of brings up this whole thing of, like, where does intersectionality begin and end here? What is there a hierarchical system? Like, is anybody, you know, bound together against a common enemy, or is it every group for themselves? I think, I don't know if this movie answers any of those questions, but I think at least raises them, which I find kind of interesting.
Certainly.
Yeah. I mean, I got the impression, though, that it was, for the white people in the movie, it came down to, oh, he's essentially Denzel's reputation was tarnished when he got arrested. And I think that was sort of this, which I thought was really interesting, this idea of a mob mentality and this kind of rolling, you know, oh, did you hear what happened to him?
Well, you know what,
oh,
I
we
heard.
Can't have that. Yeah, it was just, they just need the slightest thing to take it all away. Mm. And that was it. You got in a fight at a hotel, you know, like, I think it was that. And then, you know, for Mina's family, it was a whole other thing. And a lot of this movie reminded me of the theater. That's not really a bad thing. Like, there's that scene with Denzel and Charles S. Dutton when Denzel's fixing the van and the two of them have that interaction. And it just felt, it reminded me of Fences, actually. Mm. So this movie had a very theater feel. And I did like that about it.
Yeah, all of the decisions are really bold. I mean, there's no milquetoast mm-hmm. element to this. I did like, and I rarely say this, I did like how the white people in this film were handled in the sense that they're basically inconsequential. Like, this is not your story. Yeah.
Right.
Like, let this be another story. But they're still there in the frame reminding you of, like, the sort of the power structure within power structure. Like, that one woman whom Denzel's father works for, and how every single time she sees Denzel, she says to whomever's standing near here, like, well, you know, we helped him get a loan. And, like, and then the minute, like, it's just these, it's this great
patronizing
right insertion of, like, oh yes, lady,
he's the good one.
Like, yeah. And it really is. Oh yeah,
but I love that the father's sister has that line, and she won't even say hello to me in the street. Like, that's, you know, that tells you a lot right there.
The father and the sister seem to have a lot of sexual chemistry. I don't know if anybody else. I had to rewind because I was like, I really thought he said that Miss Rose was his sister. But I don't hold my brother's hand like that, so it was exciting. I will say, there's a barbecue scene, and it's like, for comedic effect, they have this, like, decrepit grandpa just getting things wrong. I laughed at everything that man said.
He was pretty great.
I mean, I'm easily amused. Yeah. I love a funny old person.
Sure.
Well, let's see how easily that is while we run to a vote.
Vote.
The way we vote on films here is screen it being the highest, stream it being, you know, the mid-level, and skip it being self-explanatory. So who wants to kick us off?
Ooh, I'll say screen it. I'm thrilled that I finally got a chance to see this movie again. The Criterion Blu-ray is beautiful, and as always, I recommend that you snag it on physical media. I just think I really love this kind of Denzel Washington performance. I wish there were more of them, like the sort of romantic, charming, you know, like sweep a lady off her feet Denzel Washington. I think that's a subgenre that should be a larger one. This is also the golden age of Charles S. Dutton, when he was in just, like, everything and always great and stuff. And yeah, Sarita Chowdhury, you know, like coming off of And Just Like That and you know, some other stuff that she's been doing lately, like still killing it. It's great to see her just out of the gate already being this really charming presence. And yeah, I think as Drea points out, her inexperience helps the movie because there's nothing actory about what she's doing. She feels so genuine and charismatic. So yeah, this is not a perfect film, but I think it's an important one in the as a stepping stone in a lot of careers that would go on to in some really interesting directions. And I think that it raises issues that a lot of movies in its wake have not circled back to and could stand to.
I'm also a screen it. I would have happily seen this in a nearly empty Tuesday theater. $5 or full price, either way. It also has such a good first kiss that I literally was like holding my breath for. Mm-hmm. It was so good. I love a good first kiss on screen. They're not always done well, and this one's done really well. It's got some nice sexiness to it.
There was a lot of sexiness in this. Mm-hmm. There was a lot, like with that first phone call when I realized she wasn't wearing any underwear. Woman, I was like, we ain't seen nothing like this.
She was dressed like Winnie the Pooh under the covers.
I was like, we ain't seen nothing like
T-shirt
this.
T-shirt and nothing on the bottom.
One leg out of the sheet. Nothing. Yeah, yeah. It's,
and then you know, Denzel got the hoochie daddy shorts on.
I was definitely like, thank you for those modern shorts. And then his, it wasn't a half shirt, but it was like hoisted, like you were getting similar parts that, hot.
Yep. Oh, when he comes to the hotel to beg her to go to Biloxi and he's wearing that only in the early 90s hat.
Yes, yeah.
I would say screen it as well. I know I had my issues with it, but the movie, it's a classic, and I think it does have a whole lot to say, and you're seeing such good performances from everybody. And also, that scene, that bedroom, the phone call scene is just, it's so great I think such a solid product of having a female director.
Yes.
In that, you know, Sarita Chowdhury is whatever you're seeing of her, you are seeing of Denzel. Yes. And that shirt being lifted up and everything that I love the deliberate nature of that. Like, you're not just going to see, he's not just at the crib, you know, feet kicked up on his desk while she's half naked. They're both doing the same thing. And I just think it is a sexy movie. It's a sexy movie somehow wrapped in a whole lot of politics, which I find kind of fascinating. Like, Mironair did a lot with this movie, and you should definitely, I'm all for it.
And you know me, it was very easy peasy, breezy, never cheesy. That's a screen it for me. So buckle up. You can finally get your hands on it. I watched it on the Criterion Collection. It's great. And there's a whole bunch of dope features that are also on the Criterion app as well. Some commentary, all that good stuff. So, you know, dig in and make a meal out of it.
Make a meal seasoned with masala.
Come on.
All right, on that note, we're going to take a break. But after we hear from our other friends on Max Fun, we'll jump back into it with some more show. Stay right there. Be right back.
In the briefest time, I feel like we got to know each other.
Bro, I appreciate you so much for that.
Do you read minds or what?
It's really a very sacred space you've created here.
Bullseye! You've hit the bullseye, baby!
Bullseye! Interviews with creators you love and creators you need to know. From MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Hey, were you a reader as a kid? Like maybe you read a lot of fantasy novels?
Or horse girl books. We know how it is.
But now you're an adult and you miss reading. You're so busy and you can't figure out how to get back into books.
We're Reading Glasses and we're here to help.
Yeah, we'll give you advice to figure out what books you love or learn to stop reading books you don't even like.
We're really big proponents of dumping that book.
Dump that book.
But most importantly, we'll help you fall back in love with reading. Reading Glasses, every Thursday on Maximum Fun.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Maximum Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadiway. In the studio with me are
Alonso Duralde,
Kevin Avery,
Drea Clark.
And as we said in our main discussion, Mississippi Masala is more than a cross-cultural love story. Before making it, director Mira Nair interviewed thousands of Ugandan Asian exiles. Over 30 years later, it's still the only narrative film that shows that specific cultural perspective. So what historical event or cultural perspective would you like to see a movie about? I'll add another question to the mix. Can you think of a film that opened your eyes to a worldview or historical experience you've never heard of before? And I think this is very important because, you know, just to put some flavor, put some spice, to put some masala spice, to quote Alonzo on it. You know, there are these, you know, these different cultural experiences we don't talk about, like white Jamaicans. It was fun seeing the TikTok teens find out those exist because they like hop on and they have the accent. They're like, you're doing cultural appropriation. And the Jamaicans are like, no, they are here. you know, it's truly, there's so many aspects to, or like in Nigeria, where I'm from, you know, there are a lot of like Lebanese folks. There are a lot of like Asians there who like born and raised, much like the dad in this movie, but you would never know about it because you just don't see movies about it. So what are some things that you think you'd like to cover or would like to see?
I have one. It's, and it's more, it has a thriller, a historical element,
okay,
but then a deeper thing. And that's basically the lost colony of Roanoke. From like the late 1600s. But basically when we were beginning to colonize America, the governor of this small colony left back to England, was gone for 3 years. And when he and the ships came back, like over 100 people had disappeared. But then, so in addition to them never being able to find hide nor hair of these people, and that's a lot of people to go missing, they also have this very mysterious, like carved in the tree, like these letters, like Croatan or whatever. And so there's a mystery to it, but there's also the elements of, in exploring that story, it's much more unlike what we just saw, which is rooted in a researchable history. This would be happenstance, but there's so many things of either they, because one of the theories was, of course, that the Native Americans kind of absorbed and let these people assimilate and become part of their tribe or whatever. So there's a lot of exploration, good or bad, of what the presence of these people could mean. But also there's just small things of like how they were looking at this land as something just they were able to take on in the first place. And people, and when we talk about exploring how America was colonized, we don't. Like, it's something that comes up over Thanksgiving. Remember, this land wasn't ours, but looking piecemeal at how we just sort of, I'm looking at myself, by the way, in the mirror when I say we. I know who the colonizer is here. Yeah, I find it interesting and ripe for storytelling.
Yeah, you know, my fallback answer for a long time had always been the fact that I think a lot of people don't know that after the liberation of the concentration camps, that everybody who the Nazis had thrown into those camps then, you know, got to go free, except for the gay men who then got put into a regular prison because they were still technically criminals under paragraph 175 of German law. But there was a movie this year called Great Freedom out of Germany, starring Franz Rogowski, that is about a character to whom that happens. So we are starting to see movies about that. You know, I think there are Franco stories that we really haven't even begun to start telling. Like the fact that, you know, he built this gigantic monument, you know, to Catholicism and himself, but basically using slave labor of prisoners of war during the Spanish Civil War. So like all the leftists that got captured by the fascist troops, you know, got put to work on this huge thing. And it was like a tourist site. Like I went there with my parents once and Franco was actually buried there for years. But in recent years, they actually moved his body because it's like, yeah, fuck you. You don't get to have this awful thing that you made under horrible circumstances. So, you know, if the Parallel Mothers kind of touches on that, there's so many like festering wounds about the Spanish Civil War, which happened a century ago, that we're still trying to figure out.
to answer Iffy's, I guess your second question, I didn't know really anything about the Tulsa, and I still, what I know barely scratches the surface, but the Tulsa, you know, race massacre until seeing Watchmen.
Ditto.
And so that was always the thing I was like, I need to know, I want to know more about that. I want to see more on this. But sitting here, one of the other things that occurred to me, what is rarely sort of talked about or explored, I've never seen this on screen anywhere, is just basically what happened to black people right after slavery. Just this idea of, you know, that it wasn't a light switch from like, you're free, and then we all just went and did our thing, you know. And so there are a lot of stories to tell there, obviously. There are a lot of different things happened. It wasn't all like one way for everybody. But I kind of want to see something that explores that and you know, where we went, what happened to us, how quote unquote free were we, you know, just all these things to explore. Because I think there's this idea that, well, we were free and then that was it. And everything's been cool since.
Right.
So cool.
Yeah.
Just nothing.
Everything's all right. Everything's fine, right?
Yeah, we're straight. Yeah, we're good. Yeah. What problems?
Yeah, you probably just went. They opened bank accounts. They got good paying jobs.
Well, voted. We all remember.
Compensated for.
Yeah, everybody remembers when, you know, Abraham Lincoln gave his historic "We Good" speech, and then just everything was cool. So yeah.
Yep. America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful. America.
Well, with me, one thing I'd love to do is, and you know, truly go like crazy and get like a series of these, or just do a whole bunch of like medieval slash maybe even like tap into Arthurian just to make them really mad, but just a lot of these medieval stories and put just black people in them, because there's this weird, you know, obsession with the fact that black people didn't exist back then, even though there's tons of art, tons of just history that it exists. But every time you see a black person in a Tolkien thing or a fantasy thing, which like,
you want Bridgerton in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah. just back to back and like really kind of pulling from some of these stories, because it's very like odd to me that people think black people just, you know, appeared in shackles, you know, appeared in shackles. And so I'd love to just really kind of drive home this with like a lot of series that are kind of more of the grounded leaning stuff, like remove all fantasy from it and just kind of talk of these tales. And even in the intro, kind of like use some of these like classic medieval paintings and maybe some of these characters are based off of that. Like that is my dream, because I'm just tired of having the same conversation with racist nerds whose fantasy isn't the orcs. It's just the lack of existence of people of color. Mm-hmm. Like that's their fantasy.
Like there's Ents, there's talking trees, but there aren't any black people in Middle Earth.
Oh, yeah.
While I knew about the partition of India and Pakistan, it was explained very well to me on Ms. Marvel.
Yes, I was just going to say that. I've been watching Ms. Marvel recently, and I'm like, oh, that I. Well, let's talk about this more. Like, I get it. Superheroes, but hold on, what's going on over there? Like, I really wanted to learn more about that, and they did kind of break down what was going on, but I want to see a whole thing about this.
Yeah, I mean, because like, you know, you watch a Captain America movie, and there's the assumption we all know what World War II was, but like in Ms. Right. Marvel, they're definitely like, okay, American dummies, here's how mm-hmm. the partition went down and what it meant, and how it happened, you know.
It's very well done in that it's not preachy. It's not like, and now we're going to educate you about the partition. It's really told in a very,
it becomes a very character based incident.
Yes.
The specific way that they talk about it.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's what they said about the
partition. Very sweet.
Yeah, sweet.
Sweet. Yeah. Another We Good moment of history. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. But, you know, let's flip it, whip it. And reverse it, and now we're going to give out some staff picks. It could be any movie at all. Who wants to start?
I'm going to go theme this week. Another Ooh. Great Mira Nair movie that also deals with Uganda, and that would be one of my favorite sports movies ever, Queen of Katwe, about a young Ugandan girl who becomes a chess prodigy. It's based on a true story. It is incredibly powerful. It is a great movie that Walt Disney had no idea how to release, and it kind of did not find the audience that it should have had. It is now on Disney Plus, and I hope that people go find it there. It is incredibly moving. Great performances from a cast that includes Lupita Nyong'o and David Oyelowo, along with some newcomers who are really great and who I hope we get to see again. I don't play chess, but like this movie makes me feel like I understand chess. And it is, seriously, I'm not kidding when I say it's one of my very favorite sports movies. But yeah, it is a masterpiece, and I hope people check it out. Queen of Katwe.
And I actually also have a Mira Nair film, but mine is 2005's The Namesake, which I love. It's Cal Penn in a romantic, dramatic role. And I think he's so wonderful in this, and it follows his relationship with his father, with both of his parents, and dealing with being sort of, you know, first generation and kind of bucking cultural stereotypes and dating this white woman. Jacinda Barrett is in it from The Real World. It's the only thing I'll recognize her for. But yeah, it's lovely. I think Mira has such a way of weaving in what she knows or is taking in about different cultural experiences and then making them dramatic and beautiful and emotional.
And real quick, bringing it back to the Back to the Future musical, her film Monsoon Wedding later became a stage musical.
Monsoon Wedding's fantastic.
I haven't seen a movie in so long, please, so my brain is like,
vacation.
What? No. Guys, I'm going to recommend Back to the Future. We haven't talked about it at all on this podcast. No, I'm going to say Edge of Tomorrow, starring Tom Cruise and
Emily Blunt.
Emily Blunt, thank you. It's such a good movie. I can't even articulate why I love it just because I just thought about saying this. But amazing performances, really fun science fiction, but still a story that people who might not be into sci-fi could kind of hold on to and enjoy. And also Tom Cruise doing a little bit of comedy.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of fun too.
And if you don't like Tom Cruise, you get to watch him die over and over again.
Over and over.
That's true. That's very, very true. And so many good performances in that movie. And that's my pick. Edge of Tomorrow.
Solid. Live, Die, Repeat.
Yeah. My pick is going to be a movie that, you know, I saw once, and I'll say why I picked it, only because I'm seeing, you know, not much acclaim for it. But I do believe I did staff pick this once, but it was the first time I saw young Denzel, because I feel like Denzel at his peak has been like, you know, middle age, at least for me, as a young millennial, because, you know, I'm thinking of now Glory and Malcolm X. He's pretty young in those pictures. I call them pictures now because I'm a cinema fan. Like, sure. You know,
you're a regular Peter Bogdanovich.
But like young baby faced Denzel, which makes sense because this is his first film debut. We're talking about Carbon Copy with the wacky idea of what if a white man had a black son handled in the way that you'd expect them to handle it in 1981. But like, I remember being perplexed watching this because it was like on a TV, and I was just like, like, who is this young man, and what is you know, like, who is he? So if anything, it was funny that, and I think in the same way that we talked about getting to see Denzel as this rom-com guy, I think it's the same way where Denzel has always been like Denzel, which has always been like the epitome of like dramatic acting, and like he's like, this is a comedy, so it's fun for that sense.
Yeah,
it was a good time though. We enjoyed the journey. Mm-hmm. But speaking of enjoying the journey, Kevin Avery, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And you could come back anytime. You don't have to wait so long. Oh, you don't have to wait for the next host to come.
Don't tell me that. I'm just going to Bogart. I'm just going to pop in. I'm going to zoom in.
Zoom link.
Have another host be like, what movie y'all talking about? Yeah. I'll just get up in there.
Look, is there anything you'd like to plug or let people know where they can find your stuff?
Watch The Great North on Fox. I believe
it's so good.
Thank you. Our season 3 premiere happens sometime in September, so look out for that. And if you're at Comic-Con, come see us there. We have a great panel there on Friday night, like around 7 p.m. I don't know exactly where. But otherwise, I'm on Instagram at Kevin Avery Comedy. That's the only thing I'm using right now. So there
all
it is.
All right. Sounds good. That's the way to go about it. And of course, Dre and Alonzo, big thanks to once again hop on this crazy train with me. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm, or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. That's also where you can send those hotline calls. Our producer is the wonderful Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is the also wonderful Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.